In any case, you need forces that work against gravity. What kind of forces controlled my next experience? It happened again at night. I was perhaps 12 or 13 years old by now. I was still sleeping in my old room, where the other events had already occurred. I woke up in the night. It was strangely bright in the room and I was floating. It sounds like a bad joke or an extraordinary lie from Baron Munchausen, but I was actually floating, about 1 or 2 meters above my bed. It was a wonderful feeling. It only lasted a few seconds. The light in the room went out and I fell onto my bed. A little dazed, I turned on the light and looked around. I was lying on my blanket and had injured my hand. Of course it was from that fall, I thought to myself, but the next moment the doubts came back. People can't fly, that was clear to me, but what had I just experienced? A dream? I had dreamed before that I could fly, but I knew immediately that it was a dream. This time I wasn't so sure, because my back and my hand hurt and I felt something else. A strong tingling all over my body, which lasted the whole next day. Some memories come back suddenly and unexpectedly, and even as I write these lines I remember various experiences that had been repressed by my conscious self until now. We just have to allow these memories to come back, because when this happens, a time of change begins, which we should take advantage of. It is a time of realization, but also a time of fear, when we are forced to process what we have seen and experienced. Some people can do this better, more easily and more quickly, others have problems with it. And we should be clear about the fact that so far only a few people are involved in this experience, but still more than we think. Perhaps you are one of them, but you must know that better than I do. Because until recently I had never given any thought to whether I was also affected or not. But if we look for answers, we will find them, because the subconscious opens the way. It is also a question of whether you want to know the truth or whether you are afraid of it. But in my opinion, finding answers is better than living in constant uncertainty. Remember that the mind cannot give us an answer to this, only your feelings and your subconscious. The more you suppress the fears, the stronger they come back. We should allow what is happening here, because it is not to our detriment. But to recognize this, it takes time and strength and the desire to understand and learn. Because our understanding is only directed at everyday things. Our work, our family, our children, our income and happiness. There is often little time to think about bigger things. But maybe that is exactly what matters? I am trying to find the answer to this question and I hope I will find it, because I am only just beginning to understand. Chapter 8. Higher Dimensions, by Marcus Strunsky. I had a special experience when I was about 14 years old and this time there were even witnesses there, my parents. It was a beautiful late summer day. We went on a trip together by car to Hohenberg and Der Eger. The afternoon passed and after we had dinner in a restaurant in Hohenberg, we set off for home. It was a beautiful day with a bright blue sky, not a cloud to be seen and it was wonderfully warm. We talked about the lovely trip during the journey and expected the day to end as normally as it had been. We had just passed the exit to Kofingen by Bispark and were on our way to Selbin Upper Francania. We were driving on a beautiful, wide and relatively straight and clear road, which I had often driven with my parents. A few kilometers before Selb there is a long, straight stretch of forest, which we had now reached. Another car was driving in front of us, perhaps about 50 meters away. As far as I can remember, it was a VW Golf. Suddenly, in a matter of seconds, a wall of fog appeared on the road in front of us, and that was in bright sunshine and blue skies. The VW Golf drove into this wall of fog and just as quickly as the wall of fog had appeared in front of us, it disappeared again, and with it the VW Golf. The road is straight at this point for about 800 meters, which means we should have seen the other car. But it had simply disappeared without a trace. My father stopped because we suspected that the car had come off the road somewhere. We got out and looked at the edge of the forest, hoping that we could still help someone. But the vehicle was and remained, as if swallowed up by the earth. The incident between the appearance of the fog and the disappearance of the car and the simultaneous removal of the fog lasted perhaps 5 seconds. No fog in the world evaporates so quickly. I already knew that at the time. What had happened to the vehicle? I have no plausible explanation for it, and it is mind-boggling to think about it. This little episode was also discussed with my parents in the presence of other people, but no one could find a suitable answer to our question. The only explanation I have now is multidimensionality. I want to explain it a little more clearly. We all live in three dimensions and are trapped in it. We live in height, length and depth. Imagine a cartoon character. If it were alive, it would only have height and length. How would they explain to Mickey Mouse that there is a depth? This comparison is flawed, but you can still imagine two dimensions. It is similar for us humans. We live in three dimensions. The fourth dimension is that of time, in physics, but not in metaphysics, to which we believe we are subject without restriction. Time passes, we believe. But time is just as impermanent as height, length and width. We believe that the past is over. If this were the case, then the past would be nothing. Meaningless, in other words. But how can something come from nothing? For example, our present. And since the present would be past again in a fraction of a second, the present would also be nothing, that is non-existent. If we wanted to take this idea further, we would have to conclude that we would not exist either. What a terrible thought. So what would we be? Illusions in a non-existent world? Shadowy phenomena without existential value? Oh no. We all know, each of us for ourselves, that every person is real in his or her own way. But this only works through multidimensionality. In my opinion, there are still many dimensions unknown to us, and this fact has already been proven by some scientists. Researchers of quantum physics certainly know more about this. Some time ago I was able to talk to an expert who confirmed to me that time travel, just to give one example, is definitely possible thanks to quantum physics. It is also known that elementary particles, if I am not mistaken, they are neutrinos, move faster than light and thus exceed the limits of time, that is, travel backwards in time. And according to Einstein's theory of relativity, many more things are possible on the basis of quantum physics that go beyond our understanding. If you ask me, the disappearance of the car was just a change to another dimension. But who did it? As far as my knowledge of cars is concerned, the VW Golf does not yet have a built-in dimension modulator, and it will certainly be a while before such a part is available from the factory, at least for an additional charge. The other question I ask myself is, where is the VW Golf now? Who caused this disappearance and who is capable of doing such things? You may be thinking that this is all a bit over the top, but I know what I saw. To quote Dr. Fibag, a person who has experienced such things can testify as a witness in a murder case and his testimony will not be questioned. But if the same person reports that a car suddenly disappeared or that he was floating above a bed, then it can quickly happen that the person in question is called a fraud or a shameless liar. I will face this risk here, because it is time for the truth to be told. There are inexplicable forces that intervene in our everyday lives and our lives from time to time, and this happens even though many a doubter tries to ridicule the sincerity of those people who go public with their experiences. It is better not to think about the causes, but to accept the actual events. Although it is difficult to take these accounts at face value, it would be wrong to consider everything that cannot be explained as pure lies. No one has ever seen God, but most people still believe in Him. They go to church every Sunday and pray to the Almighty when they need His help. And they do this without ever having seen Him. Are all people who send up a quick prayer in a quiet moment crazy? Are all those who hang a cross in their home and read the Bible crazy? I think not. But religion is something else. People have been confronted with the subject of God since childhood and have been for many centuries. A devout Christian is never tired of being laughed at if he believes in God. In some religions it is part of one's good reputation to follow the instructions of the church and attend all services. On the other hand, when a meeting of people with UFO experience takes place, the media always finds reasons to publicly expose those involved as daydreamers or worse. Imagine a press report that appears after a visit from the Pope, with the following wording: fanatical followers came to the meeting when an arrogant man spoke of a god whose existence none of the participants could prove, not even the speaker himself. It would be unthinkable and even, to put it mildly, an impudence. But this is exactly what is done to people who report inexplicable events. One could go on about this topic, but I think I have revealed where the problem lies. I also hope that no one feels offended by my comparison, because I do not feel offended if people do not believe my words right away. Chapter 9, Visit in the Night, by Marcus Stronsky. Several years later I moved to Altenhof near the beautifully situated Coburg in Upper Franconia. I married Diana and we moved into a comfortable four-room apartment in a two-family house. This house had a very special charm because it was on the outskirts of the community on a very quiet road. In front of the house was a wide field and behind the house a pond with an adjacent forest, where we often went for walks on nice days. Between the house and the pond was a garden with a huge lawn and a climbing frame, where our daughter, or rather my wife's daughter, spent time at every opportunity. Basically, we had every reason to be happy. One day our neighbor told us about the previous tenant of our apartment, who was not very popular in the village. He had even seen UFOs and green men, one of which was even in his apartment, we were told and smiled about it. At the time, I still smiled at such comments and could vividly imagine the previous tenant walking around the village and telling everyone his UFO story. How could I have guessed then that I would soon follow in my previous tenant's footsteps? It started out quite harmlessly. We left our apartment one evening to visit our in-laws. It was a pleasant evening and it was certainly after midnight when we got home. I put the car in the garage and we walked around the house together. My wife unlocked the apartment's door and we walked up the stairs together. Our apartment had a large staircase built into it. The apartment itself was very open and bright. I remember that my wife went up the stairs before me and I also remember her astonished face when she got to the top of the stairs. She looked at me and became noticeably paler. At first I didn't understand why she was frightened because I couldn't see anything out of the ordinary. It was only when my wife pointed to the living room door that I noticed that all the doors in the hallway, including the bedrooms, bathrooms and kitchen doors, were locked. It could have been through house that the wind slammed the doors. But that was impossible with the kitchen door, as it was a folding door. The scary thing was that my wife never closed the doors when we left the apartment and neither did I, and two of the doors even had the key locked in the lock, thank God from the outside. Since no one else could get into the apartment, this was extremely strange. We even asked the landlord whether he might be in the apartment, although we knew that he didn't have a key. This was just one small episode among many, because from then on doors opened even when we were there. Lights went on and off, and you could clearly hear the click of the light switches. Always before something like this happened, our cat Jeannie behaved like crazy, running up and down the stairs, hiding under the sofa or seeking shelter with me or my wife. At night we heard footsteps in the dark bedroom, footsteps that passed by our bed and disappeared into the darkness. Strangely, the cat also stopped sleeping in our bedroom and avoided this room. Jewelry suddenly disappeared and then unexpectedly reappeared days later. Particularly interesting was the disappearance of my golden cross, which I always wore on a chain around my neck. One morning the cross had disappeared, but the chain was still there. We searched the whole bed but found nothing. A few days later I woke up in the morning and there, cross was hanging on the chain again. I was only able to remember these events a few days ago. Was this all a coincidence? I always looked for natural explanations and rejected anything supernatural. I also remember the following episode very well. I was already in bed with my wife, we had both fallen asleep, when our daughter called out loudly for us. I woke up later than my wife and noticed that she got up to look after our daughter. Samantha was sleeping in the children's room right next to the parents' bedroom. I heard that my wife Diana and Samantha were talking to each other and that the child was crying. After a few minutes, my wife came back and lay down next to me in bed. She said that Samantha spoke of a small white man who was in her room, who pushed the covers away and touched her knee. This was a first. Our daughter usually slept very quietly and soundly and had never screamed in the night, let alone talked about small white men. I thought it was a dream, turned over and fell asleep. Until my wife shook me awake in horror. I turned over and realized that she was scared to death. She kept pointing to the bedroom door and clung tightly to my arm. I asked her what was wrong, but she could hardly speak, only a quiet whisper came from her lips. There was someone who just went into Samantha's room. I saw it exactly. Of course, I wanted to get up and look, even though I couldn't really make sense of what had happened at that moment. But I couldn't. My legs wouldn't obey me and a cold shiver came over me when I realized that I couldn't move. I stared at the door but couldn't see anything. Only the light from the street lamps shining through the glass tiles into the stairwell. I could see the banister and the shadow of a tree, nothing more. I can't remember anything else. We must have both fallen asleep. The next morning we all remembered what had happened the previous night. I asked my wife and daughter what they had seen. I had my daughter draw the white man. Unfortunately, the drawing is no longer there, but it clearly resembled a bald-headed creature with large, black eyes. I know that my daughter had never seen a picture of a little gray one before. Was she imagining it all? Then I asked my wife if she hadn't seen our daughter when she went from the toilet into the room. My wife denied it, saying that the shadow she saw could never be our daughter. So we sat down and made a drawing. This drawing shows the visitor from my wife's perspective, as seen from the bed. During the drawing, the shadow was erased several times until it was the exact size and shape. My wife reported that the base of the head was exactly at the height of the banister and the head was oversized. The figure was illuminated by the street lamps, but she still couldn't make out anything clearly. No facial features, nothing at all. I know my wife too well and I know that she has both feet on the ground. T. If she had seen something, then it was real. Furthermore, I cannot explain the inability to move, if my wife had only dreamed. One thing should not be forgotten here. The day after the incident, my wife wanted to clean windows and as she was standing at the window in the children's room, she called me to take a look at something. A leaf had been blown against the window pane from outside and was stuck there by the rainwater, roughly in the middle of the window. On closer inspection, we noticed that there were scratches in the middle of the leaf, as if someone had tried to scratch the leaf off with their fingernail. But who would have done this? The window was on the first floor, so no one could reach the window from below. If someone had put a ladder against the wall of the house to climb up, the spotlight with motion detector attached underneath would have gone on immediately. We would have noticed this. And who would have wanted to climb up with a ladder just to scrape off a leaf? That would be very far-fetched, wouldn't it? Opposite the wall of the house, about 2 meters away, was the garage. From there, the person in question would have had to be at least 3 meters tall to reach the window. So the leaf remained another mystery that no one could solve. Incidentally, the scratches were still visible on the glass after the leaf had been removed. Who has fingernails like that, is 3 meters tall and would be interested in looking through our daughter's bedroom window and scratching a leaf, only to later appear in the rooms after shrinking and scaring the residents? A bit too many coincidences for one night, don't you think? Over half a year later, we were invited to my niece's confirmation in Saalfeld, Thuringia. One of the gifts my niece had received for her confirmation was a book called The Prophecies of Nostradamus. Our daughter and I leafed through the book together and I was fascinated by the statements of this great man. On one page there is a comment that in 1997, for the first time, all people will officially have contact with others. Next to it was the head of a small grey one. Samantha immediately pointed to this picture and said to me, "He was in my room at the time and touched my knee." The girl was about 7 years old at the time and, like all children, had a vivid imagination, but she had never held onto a story so seriously and with such conviction. Could she remember a real experience or was it all just her imagination? Questions upon questions that you cannot answer yourself. The fact is that something happened to us. There were other incidents in Altenhof. One Saturday morning my wife went to work at around 5 a.m. She was helping out in a bakery at the time and always had to leave the house relatively early. It was still dark when I heard my wife slam the front door behind her. I also heard her footsteps as she walked past the bedroom window to her car. The outside lights also switched on, thanks to a motion detector. This detector was installed in such a way that when you came from the garage and walked to the front door, you could see something. If you came from the other side, the light only switched on after you had passed the detector. The passage between the house and the garage was, as mentioned before, about 2 meters wide and led towards the street. My wife was now in the passage in question and she must have already passed the motion detector. Suddenly I heard my wife's footsteps coming back, this time faster than before. She was almost running. She came back into the apartment and rushed into the bedroom. Something had frightened her. She switched on the light and when my eyes had adjusted to the brightness, I noticed how pale my wife was. Something ran across the path in front of me, she told me, searching for the right words. She described it as a small figure that made a scratching noise on the asphalt as it ran. The creature appeared at the moment the light came on. According to Diana's description, the creature was about the size of a child and jumped over the garden fence. In one leap it disappeared. My wife was so frightened that she was unable to go to work. I had never seen her like that, and I knew that she had actually seen something. It was impossible that she had imagined it. We were now prepared for such things, that is, we always expected incidents, even if we were unable to explain or process them. Whenever our cat behaved in a strange way, we knew that something was about to happen again. The animal was our warning system for the inexplicable and the supernatural. How often had it stood in the room and hissed at the wall, without, nothing was to see. Her fur was standing on end and she was not at our sweet and cuddly genie. How often she hid or sat frightened on the spiral staircase. It was strange because she only displayed this behavior at certain times, otherwise she behaved completely normally. Science has long known that animals have a well-developed sensory system. Also that they react to supernatural things. But how should you react when an animal like that attacks without you being able to see a reason for it? We were sometimes afraid when our furry friend made a fuss for no reason and we were happy for the days when our house cat was quiet. This strange behavior of the cat was also noticed by many visitors. These incidents continued for a few months and suddenly it was over overnight. A year later we moved to Lake Constance and left all these memories behind in Altenhof. We spoke to friends and acquaintances about what we had experienced, but always with the realization that we should have kept our mouths shut. So we stopped talking about the incidents and concentrated on our new surroundings and our jobs. We settled in at Lake Constance and once again repressed everything. After about 2 years of living here in Altingen, we went on holiday to Italy, specifically to Sassina Mare, about 40 kilometers south of Pisa, and rented a vacation apartment there. It was a wonderful vacation, only marred by one incident. All three of us woke up one night, startled by a sudden nightmare. A dream, mind you, that all three of us had, my wife, our daughter and I. In this dream, we were surrounded by a huge number of cats, which initially behaved quite peacefully. Suddenly these cats opened their mouths so wide that the alien in the film of the same name looked like a cuddly toy and attacked us. Then, thank God, the dream was over. We looked at each other, still shaking and drenched in sweat, and each told us his dream until we realized that all three dreams were exactly the same. The next day we went swimming in the sea and lay down on the beach. My wife asked me about a scar on my right shin, which had healed but still looked quite dark red. It was a dot-shaped scar, maybe half a centimeter in diameter. I knew that I hadn't had this scar the day before, but I had been feeling a terrible itch in that spot all morning. My wife noticed that she was also constantly itching down there on her shin, and when I looked, we found a similar scar there too, only on the left shin. We even found a similar scar on our daughter Samantha's leg, which wasn't there the day before. Where did these scars come from, which were new on the one hand, but already healed on the other? And then in the same place? I only found a connection to the dream later when I read Dr. Fibag's book. This is called a screen memory, and it was now clear to me that my family and I had been kidnapped at that time. Probably not for the first time. Processing these things and finding meaning in them is certainly not easy. So I contacted Dr. Fibag and later Aina and Karen Faisal in the hope of finding answers. To this day I am still not quite sure what happened, but I swear by everything that is dear and sacred to me that the reports are true. Doubts are not wrong, but the day of truth will come, the day when the search begins, the search for the fantastic and inexplicable. I hope that everyone will soon get an answer to their questions. Markus Stransky Oberuld Ingen, November 21, 1996. Pictures in PDF of German. It was not easy for Markus to write all this down and have it published with the other experiences. But it is wonderful to know that other people are ready for the truth that they actually already know, but are not yet ready to accept it. Markus has experienced things that many other people have experienced. If they were to question their subconscious, they would also discover the reality of the events. These beings are real, they intervene in our lives consciously and unconsciously. But these small gray beings are only a cover for something else, something bigger. Chapter 10, Trance Session on December 1, 1996. On this day, another hypnotic regression was carried out on Raina. This time, Karen asked questions herself and her older daughter Sandra wrote them down. They are both very skeptical of media statements and wanted to check carefully whether Raina was telling the truth and whether he was really in a trance. In this case, too, let us first accept the information that comes through Raina without judgment and then look later at the extent to which his information goes along with other information and agrees with it or not. Karen and Chandra had gone into another room while Raina was in a trance. That they wrote down the questions they wanted to ask Raina to make sure that he could not think of suitable answers in advance. Confronted with the questions in a trance, Raina's answers came out like a shot without a pause for thought. Karen. Is there a particular event that would be important to know and is still anchored in the subconscious? Raina. No, at the moment there is nothing that Raina's subconscious has to tell you. Karen. Where are you from? Raina. We come from Aldebaran. Karen. What is your commander's name? Raina. Karen. When will the earth changes occur, the time of transformation? Raina. It won't be long now and then you will see what happens. You don't have to be afraid. Chandra, you want to ask something? Sandra. The picture I painted, who is that? Raina. It's Rodon, your friend from Aldebaran. The picture is very close to him, Rodon is a friend of Ino. Karen. Are there Aldebaran bases on Earth? Raina. Yes, deep in the ocean and under the pyramids on Mars and on the dark side of the moon. We have already contacted the American government twice, but were not taken seriously, so we have to intervene. It will cost many people's lives. Oh, you are worrying far too much. Your books will do well, your book will, also, be printed in America. We will help you. Because in America in particular your books are very important to take away the negative fears that are produced by the government. We are not allowed to tell you everything yet, because it would be dangerous for you. Raina is still too euphoric and would report too much about it in public and expose himself to unnecessary dangers. You will get the right information at the right time. We will also lead the right people to you, and you will also recognize these people. In 1997 you will meet many people who will help you and also support you financially. We have placed people everywhere who are knowledgeable and informed.